On the next Doing Time with Ron Kuby, President Obama hailed as a military hero for taking out three pirates with no loss of life. The Somalis respond by opening fire on Congressman Donald Payne, just visiting there in Mogadishu. And we'll speak with the author of The Accidental Terrorist, how a young Mormon missionary ended up being arrested on charges of suspected terrorism. On the next Doing Time with Ron Kuby.
Ron Kuby, weekday afternoons on AirAmerica.com.
This is Doing Time with Ron Kuby on AirAmerica.com. You're listening to Ron Kuby.
Doing Time with Ron Kuby.
What's going on? Well, it's Tuesday and you're doing time with Ron Kuby. We'll round up the economic news, retail sales drop. Hey, tax day is tomorrow. Get ready for the big teabagging parties. The SEC will investigate the Bank of America. Employers are using the recession as an excuse to cut salaries and benefits, even when it's not necessary. We'll cover those stories and more in a segment we like to call Economic Broccoli. And warning, 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 wingnut alert. As I said, as soon as I heard Barack Obama's speech when he talked about the five pillars of the economy, I said within 24 hours, there would be at least 10 wingnut bloggers that said Obama's reference to the five pillars of the economy, in fact, was a secret reference to Islam, the five pillars of Islam, thereby betraying his Muslim origins. Stephanie managed to find the very first one of those wingnuts within 15 minutes. So I'm sure there'll be another nine up by this time tomorrow. Well, speaking of odd religious beliefs, if you have been anywhere in the world, any of you, ever, which includes all of you, at one time or another, you've come across usually two nice, bright, clean, white young men, sometimes nice, clean, bright, white young women, wearing dark shirts, dark suits, and having a little card in their pocket, and they are elder so-and-so or sister such-and-such, and they're carrying books, and you immediately recognize them as Mormon missionaries. And if you were at all a decent human being, somewhere in your heart, no matter how atheistic you have a tendency to be, you have to feel sorry for these young people as they're schlepping around Earth, not really having much of a clue about what's really going on around them. At least I always felt sorry for them. But I always wondered who they were. What is their story? Where do they come from and where do they go? And what the hell are they actually doing? Well, somebody who can answer all of those questions has answered all those questions in what I will call a book, but for reasons that will become painfully obvious, it's not really a book because it hasn't actually been published, is Bill Shun, who's a science fiction writer. He's the author of a, quote, book, close quote, The Accidental Terrorist, and you can communicate with him and learn more about what we're going to be talking about at Shunnet, that's SHUNN.net. Bill Shun, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Ron.
So take us through this story. You were a Mormon missionary on your very first mission, and they sent you to, of all places, Canada.
Yes, they did. I was hoping, like many of my friends, to get sent to someplace where I could learn a foreign language, someplace really exotic. But I got sent to Canada. You play the card that you're dealt with. I was sent there for 2 years to proselytize, essentially to go door-to-door with my trusty companion, who was never to leave my side, as we passed out books of Mormon and tried to interest people in the gospel that we were preaching.
Now, you lived, or you were at least supposed to live, in accordance with a number of amazingly strict rules in the sort of secret Bible, the White Bible, the sort of rule book. Tell us a bit about what life was like on a day-to-day basis.
It was about the most boring thing I've ever done in my life.
You're not exactly selling us books here, Bill. Come on.
We got up at 6 o'clock in the morning. We were expected to study scriptures for an hour on our own, then for an hour with our companion, be out of the apartment by 9:30, knocking on doors, preaching the good word of the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. We got a lunch break, but we were supposed to do that pretty much all day long until 9:30. Hopefully, we might line up an appointment to have dinner with some of the local Mormons, who we then could give our pitches to and convince them that we were good enough people that they should introduce us to their non-member friends, their coworkers, so that we could teach them. Because it was more effective to get the local members of the Mormon Church to do some of our contacting for us. If we just went out cold calling, The odds weren't good of finding people who would want to listen to us and join the church.
Right. Now, how did you deal? I mean, look, I used to sell stuff door to door back when I was young, and I eventually quit because it was incredibly difficult to have people constantly slamming the door in my face or abusing me or otherwise, you know, insulting me when all I was trying to do was make a living. What was it like for you?
Oh, the rejection was incredibly difficult to deal with. You could go out for hours at a time and not have a single person want to talk to you. We would try to liven up the proceedings for ourselves by cracking jokes once we got off the doorsteps, doing all sorts of memorization games back and forth. We would practice reciting memorized scriptures as we went. Or, you know, we would just shoot the breeze as we went along. I mean, I became really close friends with a lot of the guys that I went door-to-door with. But that doesn't mean that the rejection was easy to deal with at all.
Now, I'm thinking back to when I was 18, 19 years old. Pretty outside of getting high, the one thing that was on my mind constantly was having sex. And in your book, you talk about the GC, I think it is?
The girl challenge.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
One of the things we were strictly forbidden to do as missionaries was date. We were not to be alone with members of the opposite sex. We had to have a chaperone present at all times if we were going to teach anyone of the opposite sex. And this went whether you're a male missionary or a female missionary. But occasionally it would happen that some of the elders in the mission found a girlfriend. Either there would be girls at church who were just so blown away by the righteous image that the missionaries presented that they just had to have them.
In a
Mormon sense, right. You know, maybe holding hands or something, something pretty innocuous. But occasionally this extended also to the relationships between male and female missionaries. I had at least one companion who was carrying on a pretty serious relationship with another missionary.
One of the sort of the seminal part of the book involves you getting arrested for committing an act of terrorism in Canada, and it was fairly, you call yourself an accidental terrorist in the book, but this wasn't accidental, although we can question whether or not it's terrorism. Certainly post 9/11 it would be. What was it that you did?
Well, to understand that, we need to back up a little bit, mm-hmm. a couple of months to where I decided that I was done with my mission and I was going to run away. I hopped on a bus. I made it all the way from Calgary to Great Falls, Montana, before a Mormon stake president, rank above a bishop, caught up with me and convinced me to go back. And one of the things that was made very clear to me by my leaders as part of this incident was that I was not in trouble for trying to leave, but my companion was in a lot of hot water for not doing everything in his power to stop me.
Uh-huh.
So then, a couple of months down the road, I had a companion who was extraordinarily depressed. He'd only been out in the field for 4 months. I'd been out about 6 months at that time. And he wanted to go home. He had booked a flight, and through one method or another, got me with him to the airport. He had planned all this to a T, and just pretty much needed my assistance to give him a little breathing room before I called the higher-ups at the church to let them know that this guy had run away.
Mm-hmm.
But as he went to board his flight, I was thinking to myself, and I had tried to talk him out of leaving, tried to talk him into going to talk to some of our leaders, and that hadn't worked. So when he went to board his flight, I felt enormous pressure as sort of the steward of his soul that I had to do everything in my power to keep him from leaving Canada.
Okay, so it sounds like, you know, you really did your best. You remonstrated with him. You tried to convince him.
I did.
What did you do then?
The next step was to go to a payphone, call his airline, and tell them that there was a bomb on his flight.
Oh.
Yeah.
This was the means of sort of preventing him from leaving.
Yes. And that was supposed to... That was supposed to slow down the plane.
I'll bet it did.
Leaving.
You know what, Bill? I'd like to carry you over to the other side because this is a good story. I'd like to hear more about what happened. So we'll leave you with the phoning in the bomb threat that there was a bomb on the plane to prevent your brother Elder from leaving, and we'll be back in just a minute. Can I say this with the rest of the story? Nah, I can't do that. Paul Harvey was the only one who could do that. You're doing time with Ron Kuby. We'll bring you the rest of Bill Shun's story on the other side.
You're doing time with Ron Kuby.
Call Kuby now at 866-303-2270.
This is Paul Schaefer, and you're listening to Air America.
This is your home for progressive talk. AirAmerica.com.